Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Chronic.
Tick, 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 tick. Boom! Yes, peeps! It's Meltdown Monday, and you know what Meltdown Monday is. It's your favorite day of the week because, as always, you've tuned in, you've typed it into your Google machine, you have rocked it on YouTube, and you have once again found my favorite podcast, your favorite podcast, everybody's favorite podcast. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Meltdown. And I want everybody right now, Gemma, hold my calls because we have got the most extreme guest for you on this Meltdown Monday. It is going to be so special. And Brian, do you know what we're doing here on the Meltdown? We are going extreme and we are taking over.
I love it, Tomcat. Thank you for another electric intro, as always. You know, it feels good to be introduced by the best in the game. That's saying something. But on this Monday Meltdown, as we blast our way into episode 11, we continue to bring you current and legendary superstars from the world of pro wrestling, MMA, celebrities, NFL, and more. Even now, today's special guest brings what I like to call athletic levity to the squared circle each and every time he's in it, because he made cool blue. So it's cool to be blue. Yes, it is. We here at the Meltdown know him as Brian, but the world knows him as ECW and WWE's Blue Meanie. Welcome, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me. Thank you for that great intro. Tell me where to send the money to. Send me an
Brian please. And Tom will be fine. Just to the Meltdown care of.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I love the way that you've said that, Brian, because there's definitely going to be some couple somewhere that is Brian and Tom that seem to be getting all our money. We need to find them.
probably going to be sending some gift certificates to some people, maybe some merch like we do anyway. So, yeah.
Get some swag.
There you go. We can do that. Well, Brian, we really are glad you're here with us today, man. We've been looking forward to this. And we started a little differently. We will go into, of course, your career, and we'll talk about that. But we like to talk a little NFL, too, and I think you'll like that. So,
oh, absolutely.
Of course. This is right up your alley, my friend. We know you're a huge Philadelphia Eagles fan.
Yes.
And our guest from episode 9 was Gene Snitsky. And here's a nugget for you, okay? His offensive line coach at Mizzou was the legendary Andy Reid.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So the question is, do you have any special memories of you watching Coach Reid during his 14-year tenure in Philly? And if you do, let's hear about it.
Oh, Andy Reid, man. Talk about a guy who revitalized the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles, you know, I grew up diehard Eagles fan, mostly with my grandfather. It was like a bonding moment with my grandfather. My grandfather taught me a lot about football, and he also taught me how to swear at the TV during football games. So it was very cool. And, but, you know, like with anything, you know, Eagles are doing all right now, but, you know, in order to appreciate the sweet, you have to go through the sour. Yeah. And there's a lot of sour moments with the Philadelphia Eagle. But when Andy Reid came along, basically an unknown as a head coach, he had been like, you know, offensive coordinator, a quarterback's coach, yep. Coached Brett Favre. You know, when they hired him, everybody was like, who's this guy? But then he went and turned around the culture here in Philadelphia. And he just became this larger-than-life caricature, you know, to the point where we start having Andy Reid impersonators come to the game and, you know, people doing his voice going, time's yours. I'm Andy Reid. I would like to get a hoagie, roast beef, and, you know, just different things. But Andy Reid changed the culture here in Philadelphia. It made the culture a winning culture and gave us a lot of memorable years because we always felt like we were in the hunt with Andy Reid as a as the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, a lot, you know, Philadelphia sports fans are diehard. You know, you think about diehard wrestling fans, you know, Philadelphia Eagles fans are that much more diehard. You know, they know everything about you. They, you know, and they break down every little detail of your career. And Andy, I don't think Andy gets a lot of the enough appreciation for what he did in Philadelphia, because now he's mostly remembered as a Kansas City Chiefs head coach because of, you know, all the great things he's done there. But, you know, he made the culture in Philadelphia a winning culture and gave me a lot of great years because I always felt like there was a chance we could go to the Super Bowl and win it all. And it unfortunately only got us the one. And it happened to be the one that, you know, the Patriots got caught cheating in. So, or one of the few they got caught cheating in. But Andy Reid was an amazing coach and gave me some wonderful years as a Philadelphia Eagles fan.
Okay. Yeah, because prior to that, what was it, Dick Vermeil in the 80s? I mean, you probably had a few winning seasons in between that, but really Andy put it back on the map, so to speak, right?
Oh, absolutely. We had Dick Vermeil. We had Ray Rose.
Yes.
And one of the favorite coaches Philadelphia fans love, even though he didn't really get, you know, to the promised land, was Buddy Ryan.
I loved Buddy Ryan. Yeah.
We still refer to his era as Buddy Ball because his defense was so vicious and brutal. I had a chance to talk to Steve McMichael, who played for the Bears under Buddy Ryan. And, you know, there's an infamous game called the Fog Bowl in Philadelphia where the Bears against the Eagles in the playoffs. And during the course of the game, the fog rolled in, the game ended, and then the fog rolled out. But I asked him, Steve, what was it like playing in the Fog Bowl? He's like, and he said to me, he's like, that game meant so much because Buddy was our old coach. And they're saying his current Eagles defense was better than the 85 Bears defense. So we went to that game with, you know, like with our hair on fire and just wanted to make sure we beat that team, you know, beat Buddy's team. So, but yeah, you know, Buddy Ball, you know, it was great. Even though he didn't get us, I don't think he even won a playoff game, but we just loved his attitude because he knew how to play to the fans here in Philadelphia.
And his players loved him. He was out here in Arizona also for a while.
Right. Yeah.
And he's always had great leadership ability, and the fans and of course all of his players really just gravitated to him. So
there's that one game he got into a fight with another coach on the sideline.
Yeah,
it was great.
Yeah, they were shooting on the sidelines. I love it.
Yes.
All right, Brian, listen, we are going to shift gears and get into pro wrestling now that we've talked a little NFL. So my understanding, you tell me if I'm correct here, the day after WrestleMania 10, do you recall that day?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Do you recall WrestleMania 10?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Were you actually at Madison Square Garden?
No, I was still a fan. I had been wanting to become a professional wrestler for a while.
Okay. And
leading up to that day, I had been reading the newsletters and, you know, looking into wrestling schools. And there's a moment I was almost going to go to Dean Malenko's wrestling school in Tampa, Florida. Let me jump back a little bit.
I want to jump back a little bit too, because at WrestleMania 10.
Yeah.
You know, those big scoopers that, like, when a guy gets squished on a mat and they take the big frying pan handle and they flip him over, that guy that's just a pancake.
Yeah.
I was that guy.
Oh, no. No, I wasn't there, but
Adam Bomb versus Earthquake, and it lasted about a minute.
Oh, my God. What was it, like?
We were running short on time. I was just trying to rib you a little bit as far as if you remember.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No. Trust me, it was very forgettable.
I've been there.
Of course, we all have, haven't we? We all have. Yes. If you haven't, something's wrong.
Right.
You learn. Okay. After that day, I want to know about you driving up, continue your story, driving up to Lima, Ohio. Yeah. I want to hear it. Tell me about
that. I'd become familiar with a woman named Phyllis Lee, who she was a wrestler back in the day, and she was working with the Malenkos, and I was going to go to Malenko's wrestling school, and I sent correspondence, you know, looking into the school. At the time, I was working in a casino I was in Atlantic City at the time, and I was, you know, every week I would take my paycheck, put half to the house, half in a sock drawer, saved up my tuition. And, Phyllis, eventually was telling me, you know, how much, you know, what was the cost to live down there in Tampa? And I was like, ooh, that's a little bit stiff. But then she, you know, switched gears and she's like, yeah, have you heard of Al Snow? I was like, yeah. So she's like, you know, he's got school in Lima. It's, same amount of tuition, but
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
You would live in the school and told me how much it was to live there, and I was, absolutely. So I saved all my money, and eventually she threw my punk card down and said, when are you coming out? I was like, so one night I was walking to work with my mom. She worked at another casino, we were standing there waiting for the light to turn green. I was going across the street with her. I go, you know what? I think tonight I'm going to go in and give my 2 weeks notice. I think I'm going to go to the wrestling school in 2 weeks. So it was, and it happened to fall the day after WrestleMania 10. So, we had a little going away party for me. The night of WrestleMania 10, and next morning I loaded up my car with everything I owned, because I didn't realize, you know, I could have just packed my clothes, but no, I had to pack my entire room because I knew no better. And I just started my journey out to Lima, Ohio to train with Al. And I was so inexperienced at traveling, you know, I was like, I'll be there in about 6 hours. And 13 hours later, I showed up at, you know, the school in Lima, Ohio, and I had heard of Al. Al was just starting to make a name for it. Al had been in the business for 13 years up to that point, and he was just starting to have this really good feud with Sabu, and that's where I started hearing about him. So I, you know, show up, and I go, go up the elevator. It was like in this old Masonic temple building, and we had the 5th and 6th floor. And go up the elevator, get off the elevator, I go, I'm looking for Al. He goes, hi, I'm Al, I'm leaving. And he was heading out to go up to Michigan to get some stuff for his ring from Dan Severn, some padding for the ring. But the next day, he started my journey into the training. And Al gave me one of the most important, you know, talks of the beginning of my career. You know, he pulled me in the office. He's like, look, I'll be honest with you. I want you to be honest with me, you know. You know, and... you know, he was the best risk I ever took in my life, because I took a journey from Atlantic City to Lima, Ohio, or a woman I hadn't even met in real life that I sent my money to. And I could have showed up at this empty building. And just like you hear so many horror stories of people breaking into the wrestling business of, yeah. I gave my $3,000 and I showed up and the ring was gone and everybody was gone and the guy had my money. But no, Al had a wonderful school there. He was a wonderful teacher and he became a big brother of mine who I still consider one of my best friends to this day.
I like that. That's a good positive story. Yes.
Oh yeah. There's not.
An ordained minister. He officiated your wedding, right?
He didn't know he was going to, but he ended up. Me and my wife, who I've been calling Mrs. Meany forever. We were going to have WrestleMania was here in Philly 2 years ago, and we're going to have a party called Meany Mania at my favorite bar here in Philly, McCusker's. And the bartender was like, "You're crazy not to do something, you know, Mania week." I was like, "All right." So we start planning the party. During the course of planning the party, my wife goes, "You want to do some paperwork?" It's like, "Yeah, why not?" So she looked into it, and there's this thing in Pennsylvania called a Quaker wedding where you only need two witnesses to just sign paperwork. And we're like, "Let's do the Spaceballs wedding. Let's go on the mic. Go, do you? Yes. Do you? Yes. Okay, good. You're married." And that would be. So we get to, we're waiting for the proper moment. The bar's packed. I would have been happy to 20 people if 20 people showed up, but the bar was packed. And our friend who was doing Quizzo tonight showed up with his PA. I was like, "This is perfect." He sets up, he's testing. I was like, "Let's do it right now." I was like, "Hey, Al, come up with me. Let's do some announcements. You know, welcome to the party, this, that, and the other thing." So we had Al and our good friend Sebastian come up. And I get on the mic and I go, "Everybody, welcome to Meany Mania." I do the Vince thing. "Welcome to Meany Mania," you know. And everybody's like, "Yay." I'm like, tip your bartender, you know, enjoy some free. I had free food. We had drinks with this. I was like, and of course, Mrs. Meany's here. And I was like, you know, me and Mrs. Meany have been together 18 years and I've, you know, been calling her my wife, even though she's my girlfriend. But that changes right here. Right now, and you hear the whole crowd go, "What?" And I turned to my friend Sebastian, go, "Sebastian, hold our rings." And everybody's like, you just hear this rumble, like, "Is this an engagement? Oh my God, this is a wedding." And then Alex, grabs the mic. He's like, "You know, I'm ordained minister." And we try to explain we wanted to do this, you know, Spaceballs, but Al, being the worker, was like, "Give me that mic." And he just took over the wedding. He's like, "Do you, Mrs. Meany, take Mr. Blue Meany to be your lawfully wedded husband?" And then, she said, "Yeah." And then I said, "Yes." And I now pronounce you Mr. and Mrs. Meany, which got a, holy bleep chant, in the bar. It might be the first wedding to got a holy bleep chant. And, and she's been my best friend for close to 20 years. And we just finally made it official. And it was cool to, have Al Snow, who not only is the reason why I have a wrestling career, but I might not have met my wife if it wasn't professional wrestling. So Al has that tie in as well. And it was a beautiful moment, looking around the bar and just seeing people. It got like a Road Warrior pop, it was pretty cool.
Wow.
Now that's a WrestleMania party I would have loved to have been a part of.
Yeah.
Congratulations, guys. That's awesome.
Oh, thank you so much, man. She's
Congrats. My best.
She was with me when I was at my lowest point. There's a point where I got a bacterial infection in my lung and she was living with me for 3 months and I'd go into the hospital and she was there, when I'm spitting up blood, she's got the spittoon underneath my head and she's wiping my forehead because my face had exploded with fever. And, when I got out of there, I was like, I realized she was the one because she could have left, she could have just said, I'm out of here. I'm going back to Connecticut. She stayed with me and she's been my best friend.
Oh, what a sweetheart.
Awesome.
What a story.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. I have the pleasure of hosting so many wonderful weddings. That is epic. What a story. I love it. I love it. So much heart, so much soul, and so much vibrance and difference. I love it. And
check it out. Go to my Instagram. I have it pinned to the top of my page, Instagram.com/BlueMeanyBWO. The first two videos are two different versions of our wedding. So
we are definitely going to patch it in to the show. It is everyone is going to see it on screen as you're watching the meltdown. So if you hear my voice right now, you'll have just seen Mr. Blue and Mrs. Blue Meanie tying the knot. We love it. We love it. We love it. Well, let's speak about something else that is very near and dear to our hearts on a very significant day that we will come to a little bit later on. But something near and dear to my heart was the Tribe of Extreme and ECW. It was truly like lightning in a bottle. I don't think it's ever going to be replicated. And you were such a massive part of that journey. Talk to us a little bit about what ECW means to the Meanie.
Oh man, there's when it comes to ECW, there's just not one answer. Mm-hmm. I was part of the Philly wrestling scene as a fan. You know, we had Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, which was the precursor to ECW. There might not have been an ECW without Tri-State Wrestling Alliance and Wrestling Radio and the Square Circle Fan Club. So when the Tri-State went out of business, there's this void in Philadelphia for the fan base, you know, me being one of the fans. And then ECW comes along, starts running shows. And as a fan, I start going to ECW shows as a fan. And when it was Eastern Championship Wrestling before the Extreme. And then I moved away to Ohio for a year. I missed, you know, the year of, I missed from March of 94 to March of 95, to go to train to wrestle. And I come back and I'm a greenhorn, I'm this aspiring pro wrestler. And I would still go to ECW shows while I'm still doing like independent dates and stuff like that. And there was three independent shows. One was in Baltimore, one was in West Virginia, and one was in Pittsburgh. And one of those shows was Raven and Stevie Richards. And the third show, I had a match and I knew Raven was going to wrestle somebody I went to Al school with. I was like, oh, this is gonna be great. I gotta watch this. So I watched her match and Raven comes to the back and I go, I really like your match. He goes, hey kid, nice moonsault. I was like, oh, you watched my match. And next day, we stayed at the promoter's house. Shout out to Norm Connors, another guy who's huge to my career with Steel City Wrestling. And he brought up the idea of me being part of their deal. Now Stevie was his lackey, so he wanted to have a lackey for a lackey, like the Russian dolls, kind of that. Mm-hmm. And, from that point, he invited me into ECW. And then at November 95, they had me sit in the crowd as a fan, ironically enough, because I had been in the arena as a fan for so many years. And they brought me over to Guardrail to be a part of Stevie's deal. And that simple act of me going over to Guardrail for being from fan to wrestler was so symbolic because I'd been in the crowd for so many years as a fan, as a Philadelphia, sports fan, wrestling fan. Now I was going to be a part of the company. ECW was like the fifth sports team of Philly. We had the Phillies, Eagles, Flyers, Sixers, ECW.
So at least they were on the one hand. At least we got that.
Yeah. Well, now we got soccer. So it's, six, but back then it was, five. And ECW was so special. I remember, when it first started airing on here on Sports Channel Philadelphia and then taping the shows, watching the shows, but to actually be a part of it.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
I was only a year and a half in the business when I went there, so I was super green, but to sit under that learning tree, Paul Heyman, Terry Funk, Tommy Rich, Tracy Smothers, Tracy had a great feud in ECW, but we had met in Indianapolis, Indiana, when I was living at Al's. Al booked us out to a guy named Mike Samples in Indianapolis, and every Thursday we'd go out there, and Tracy Smothers was on those shows, and he would pull me aside. He was there, Ricky Morton was there, Sabu was there, he was on the outs with ECW at the time. And they would pull me aside and say, hey man, good match. Next time try this, that, and any other thing, but go to ECW and then get to have a feud with, Tracy Smothers, who's with Tommy Rich, and so many guys in that locker room. Terry Funk pulled me aside, early on in ECW. Yeah, I always learn sit there, ears open, mouth shut. So I'm just sitting there dressed in my gear, and Dreamer comes over and grabs me by the arm and goes, "Somebody wants to talk to you." So I go over, and it's Terry Funk. He goes, "Oh, Blue Meanie. So nice to meet you, Blue Meanie. Blue Meanie, you got to go out to the junkyard to get a blue car. Blue Meanie, go get a blue car, put a B on it, and then drive to the arena." And people go, "Oh, look at that Blue Meanie in the blue car with a B on the side. Goddamn, Blue Meanie." You know, and yeah, I was like, Terry Funk tells you to go get a blue car, you should probably go get a blue car. And, you know, but just to have moments like that in that locker room and just learning, you know, like I was fresh clay. You know, I learned with Al. Al had me work with veterans like Denny Cass and Mickey Doyle in Michigan and different veterans to get different knowledge. Then I go to ECW, and there's so many different guys who I got to learn from there that, you know, God knows, I don't know how else I would have been able to go to the WWF, you know, if I had it not been for ECW. I got to go to WWF and, you know, pay back my family for who are supporting my wrestling habit, you know. And you know, I've had such a great career and great life because of those three letters, ECW. And the thing that I think gets diagnosed with ECW is people think it was all blood and guts. But if you actually went to, if you watched the weekly TV shows and watched, you know, they went to a show, there was great wrestling on the undercard too. I mean, we used the blood and the guts to draw you in. But once you're in, you got to see some really good wrestling. We had, you know, Tommy Rogers, we had Jerry Lynn, Rob Van Dam, Sabu, you know, so many guys who could do scientific and a little bit of hardcore. But you know, it was, there needs to be a movie done like on ECW. ECW was one, when people go describe ECW, I was like, ECW was one part Rocky Horror Picture Show, one part the movie Slapshot, and one part the movie Major League, because we were a bunch of misfits, but we were going out there and doing something, not realizing at the time that it was kind of shaking up the wrestling business.
You were a bunch of misfits, but you seemed like a family of misfits. Yeah. That's what we as fans always sort of pulled away from it. And for me personally, I was really into tape trading being over here in Manchester, UK. We didn't get any footage sort of on terrestrial TV, on satellite TV, on cable. We had to bring it over. So we had all these different tape traders who were swapping tapes, and you've got to see this. And this was ECW Hardcore TV from this week, and blah, 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 blah. And I remember getting some of the Tri-State Wrestling stuff as well, early doors. So it was like Cactus Jack against Eddie Gilbert in like Falls Count Anywhere matches, and I'd never seen anything like that in 1992. And so much of the stuff that you did meant so much to me growing up. It was just beautiful. But there were loads of different territories that did that, and we got to see Brian in Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Yeah, hey, that's a good you mentioned it just a moment ago, but that's something, a little tie-in of us, Brian, also, is that I worked with Tracy at Smoky Mountain Wrestling under Jim Cornette's promotion. And my first championship ever was against with Tracy in Smoky Mountain for the Smoky Mountain TV title. I learned so much from Tracy. He was amazing. I was blessed to be working with him. I had some guys that were a locker room full of legends that really helped me along. So I understand what you mean about being under that learning tree, because I was that way in Smoky. But Tracy was fantastic. He really was.
Tracy gave more to the business than he ever got back. And, you know, I'll praise him to anybody who's willing to listen. But, like, yeah, you know, he would teach you stuff, but he would teach you stuff he learned from other people as well. You know, he loved Bobby Eaton, and he would always talk about, you know, working with Bobby Eaton and, you know, give you a little bit of lessons here and there. And, you know, I was just this kid, and he didn't have to teach me anything. He could have just, you know, worried about his spot, but he raised me up to another level. So I'll always be appreciative to Tracy Smothers.
As we do here on the Meltdown, let's send out all our love upstairs to a fallen icon. Tracy Smothers, this is for you, brother. Boom.
Sure.
Take a swig. Well, speaking of icons, as we progress through your ECW lineage, there is the formation of one of my all-time favorite groups. And you knew we were coming. So much so, I knew we were having the Blue Meanie on, but I felt like I needed to get all blue with my swag to talk about three very special letters in BWO. I want to talk to you about the Blue World Order, the formation, how it all came about, what it means to you. And I also want to ask you, through being on the convention circuit and everything that has been and gone in the past 25 years, what did the NWO think of the BWO?
Man, at the time, me and Stevie, we're with Raven. And one night we're driving to the arena with Raven, and Raven was great. You know, he's always thinking of stuff, and he created so many characters. You know, he created, you know, me. He gave me a character. He helped Stevie develop his character. He created the Dudleys. You know, he gave so much to the wrestling business. Now, I wish he was a trainer somewhere teaching people. But one night we're driving to the arena from Raven's house, and he goes, "Eh, I want you guys to go out there. Tonight you're going to call yourselves the Fabulous Ones." And we're like, "What?" And he's like, yeah, you call yourselves the Fabulous Ones, Stevie and Stan, you know, or Meanie and Stan or whatever. We're like, whatever. And then he's, you know, teach us to do the Fargo Strut. And that was like the beginning of us doing parodies in ECW, but kind of like Weird Al Yankovic in music. We were the Weird Al of wrestling, where we'd find a different wrestler from a different time frame and do a parody, you know. Where I was Colonel Demini, which was based off Colonel De Beers. I was Blue Dust. Stevie was Baron Von Stevie, you know, based off Baron Von Raschke. And then, you know, the one I thought was going to be the one to kind of be like the coup de grace for our parodies. One night we came out as Kiss, you know, right when Kiss was getting back together with the makeup. So I, you know, Stevie was Paul Stanley. I was Gene Simmons. We brought in Donnie Allen to be Peter Criss. Yeah. And Nova was Ace Frehley. So I was like, oh, that's, you know, going to be it, you know, for the parodies. And along, you know, comes the New World Order, which is like the hottest thing in professional wrestling, you know? So we're like, yeah. And Steve was a little nervous, like, oh man, I hope we don't get heat doing this. And Raven's like, I know them. We'll be okay, you know? So we're like thinking of a name, and, you know, Bubba Ray Dudley, you know, was kind of in it as well, you know, trying to help us. He's like, hey, you guys got to do the Blue World Order. And we're like, what do we call it? Like the New Blue World Order? Yeah, we're trying to think of names. So like, simply just the BWO, Blue World Order, you know? And, you know, I'll be, you know, we'll go in size order. Stevie, you're the tallest. You could be Nash. You know, I can be Scott Hall. Instead of bad guy, I'll be the blue guy, oozing blue cheesemo. And Nova, you be Hogan. And it just became this parody. It was supposed to be a one-night deal. We're supposed to do it one night, and that was going to be it. And, November to Remember 1996, we came to the ring as the BWO, and, you know, Paul and Todd Gordon, you know, Todd was the owner, Paul was helping run, and eventually became a part, and he became the owner, you know. They're like, I think we have something here, and I think we're going to be doing more with this. And, you know, from that point on, we start doing like impromptu run-ins, not even run-ins. We just come out, strike the pose, go back to the locker room, call it, you know, high five with the fans. You know, we have people with picket signs, with BWO signs, and the Blue World Order became the catalyst of Stevie becoming, you know, a singles competitor for the world heavyweight title. And, you know, just as things go on, it was to the point where we had a whole show just dedicated to the BWO instead of the opening ECW opening. They did the BWO theme and, you know, highlights, and Joey Styles usually goes, this is extreme. And this episode, he goes, this is blue. And it was the coolest thing, you know? And then they start selling the t-shirts, and, you know, it became like one of the highest selling t-shirts in the company's history. You know, you always go to the merch girl, go, and how are we doing? You know? And she would tell us what we're doing, like, oh my God. So, it just became this catalyst to so many bigger things of, you know, us being elevated in the company, Stevie being elevated to a singles competitor for the world title. And, you know, to this day, people, you know, I mean, you know, it's over when you're watching Monday Night Raw and there's people in the crowd with BWO signs and BWO shirts. WrestleMania that was at the Alamo Dome, was it WrestleMania or Royal Rumble that year?
Yeah.
People in the front row where
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
BWO shirts, and it's just like, oh my God, this is crazy. You know, just three kids from, you know, the Philly area doing a parody, and, you know, it's had this reach. So, I mean, we're here in 2025. People still wear the shirts, people still buy the shirts. And, you know, it's something that, you know, was supposed to be a one night thing, but, you know, changed our careers, you know. And, yes, you know, what did the NWO think about it? I didn't find out until much later what they thought about it. I went to the WWF and I would run into Sean Waltman, you know, X-Pac. I was like, hey, man, I hope you guys didn't mind the NWO thing. I mean, the BWO thing. He's like, no, we loved it. And, you know, we talk about, you know, the guys would, you know, after a WCW show, they would go out and try to find, you know, a place to have wrestling on the TV, and ECW would be on the TV. And then later on, Scott Hall would tell me, Scott came to ECW for a second, and he was like, yeah, I would watch, you know, you guys on TV as the BWO. And I would say to Kev, well, if that's the Blue World Order and the, you know, blue guy's me, I should be the leader of the NWO, right? You know, just joking around. Kevin Nash was great about it. You know, Kevin Nash said, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And eventually I found out, I have a friend who was doing a radio show out of Delaware, Brian Socia, and he had Hogan on, and he brought it up to, you know, Hogan. And Hogan said, oh, BWO, I loved it. It was great. You know, so we got a vote of confidence from each member of the NWO. And that's what it was. It was all about respect. We weren't mocking or whatever, but, you know, we had a little fun with it. You know, the NWO would be on WCW, and somehow ECW came up, and they were talking about a bingo hall. And the next ECW show, you know, we come out with bingo cards, and we're throwing bingo cards out to the crowd, you know, play extreme bingo, you know, just have a fun little jab back and forth with each other. But BWO, I mean, you know, it should be on my tombstone, you know, when you know, down the line, but it definitely had a positive effect on my career. And again, I have to state, it was supposed to be a one night thing that became this phenomenon, you know.
We are definitely all about the positivity, yeah, aren't we, Brian? We're all about a story. What an incredible story. And it just lays us up for a segue straight into something else that was truly positive of the time in 1998. Brian, let's talk about the WWF.
Yeah, so you joined WWE, WWF at the time in 98. Tell us about you being paired with Dustin Rhodes during the Attitude Era. What were your thoughts on being paired instantly with, you know, on the main stage right away up near the top of the card with Goldust, Dustin?
Yeah, you know, natural evolution. You know, I was in ECW, and Stevie had gone to WCW, and me and Nova were doing great things as a tag team. And, you know, again, here's my relationship with Al Snow coming into full effect. You know, we went to do a show in Pittsburgh for Norm Connors, me and Nova. I get home, and there's a message on first day with the new mouth. My machine from Al Snow. Hey, Meanie, give me a call. So I wake up the next day, give Al a call, and goes, hey, are you under contract to WWE? I was like, no. He's like, well, if there's an opportunity to go to WWF and be in the job squad, would you be interested? I was like, absolutely. It's like, okay, I'll call you, call you back. And then maybe an hour or two later, get a call from Bruce Pritchard. Brian, I need your social security, this, that, and the other thing. I'm like, oh, this is happening. So, you know, I give him my information, and like, it's, you get that feeling. I can only equate to realizing you've won the lottery. You won the Powerball, you know, the electricity that went through my body when I went, hey, Brian, it's Bruce Pritchard from WWF. I'm like, whoa, you know? So I give him my information. He's like, all right, we're at the, well, now it's the Wells Fargo Center. See you down at the First Union Center this Sunday, be there 11 a.m. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Hung up. And I just stood there and I walked 20 feet from my bedroom to the living room. We had a one story apartment and I looked at my mom. I walked through the door, looked at my mom and my grandma in the living room. I go, hey, put all the bills in my name. And they're like, what? You know, cause they had been supporting me up until that moment, you know, in ECW, I started making okay money where I was able to contribute and stuff like that, but not what I should be doing. And I said, put all the bills in my name. And they looked at me like, what? I was like, I'm going to the WWF. And my grandma, you know, just clutched onto the chair next to her. Like her knees almost gave out. My mom was like, "Woo!" She's like Edith Bunker from All in the Family. So they put all the bills in my name and, you know, that was able to, I was able to pay back, you know, my family who took care of me, you know? So I go to the building and, you know, I joined the job squad. They had my debut in Philadelphia. So that's another storybook thing that where if you did a movie on my life, you're like, oh, this is corny, right? I debuted for ECW in Philadelphia, debuted for WWF in Philadelphia. And then eventually I had my own WrestleMania moment in Philadelphia, my hometown. But, you know, join WWE, join the job squad, have a little run with that. Eventually the job squad starts splintering off, you know, and I'm, you know, you just got to start thinking, you know, what am I going to do? So Al and Goldust were having this little feud where Goldust stole Al's head. And I'm sitting there and we're like, So I go to Vince Russo. I was like, hey, you know, Goldust just stole Al's head. In ECW, I did a parody of Goldust called Blue Dust. What if I brought Blue Dust back? Goldust plays the mind games. What if I brought Blue Dust back to play mind games with the guy who plays mind games to get Al Snow's head back? And Russo's standing there. He's chewing the gum. He's like, yeah, bro. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he goes off to do whatever he's doing. He comes back. He goes, yeah, bro, we're going to do that thing you suggested. And I was like, oh, my God. So I come back as Blue Dust and I start messing with Gold Dust and we have a match at St. Valentine's Day Massacre 1999, and yeah, that's kind of like the blow off to our feud. But then they saw us, these two unique characters, well, if they're so good against each other, they must be good together, and they start pairing me with Gold Dust and, you know, another person who taught me so much, Dustin, you know, travel with him, sitting under his learning tree, listening to him call a match. And, you know, when I went to the WWE or WWF, you know, I was still, you know, it doesn't matter what you did anywhere else. Once you get to WWF, it's starting over, you know, and I kind of had to learn that WWF style. So I, you know, working with Dustin, even if I was just in this corner and listened to a call match, like how I learned about, you know, psychology, listen to Raven call a match, I learned so much, you know, by being with Dustin, being with Terry as well. She was, you know, on the road with us as well. And, you know, eventually I got to manage Goldust at WrestleMania 15 in Philadelphia in a four-way for the Intercontinental Championship, where it was Goldust against Ken Shamrock, Road Dogg, and Val Venus. WrestleMania moment in Philadelphia, my hometown. And it was just one of those serendipitous things where if I hadn't made that suggestion to Vince Russo, I might have got lost in the shuffle. I might not have been able to, you know, just travel the world, because after WrestleMania 15, I went on my first European tour. You know, we went through the UK, we went to Germany, and, you know, just working with Goldust as Blue Dust and then being his partner as the Blue Meanie is one of the best things that people still bring up to this day. I even went and got, you got one of these behind you, an action figure, a Bone Crusher, because, you know, when I was in WWE, I missed out on the Bone Crunchers, I believe it was. Yep. And, you know, the company, you know, came to me a couple of years ago. So this could pair, you know, you could put this right next to the Goldust figure and they would, you know, be, you know, side by side. Perfect. You know, and that's all because of Goldust allowing me to be in his orbit and as part of his persona and his world. he could have easily like, I don't want to work with this kid, you know, but he brought me in and, you know, I love him. And, you know, every day, every time I see him, we got a big old hug for him and, you know, appreciation for him.
That's great. Yeah.
What a story. And they're all positive, these, Brian, aren't they? This is what we are.
Yeah.
So Meltdown is a positive show. We promote good mental health, we promote well-being, and we promote positivity. And today is a very meaningful day. We sit here recording this show on the 12th of June, 2025. And if we jump in our DeLorean and head back exactly 20 years, today would have been the rebirth of the Extreme, a reunion like no other. A tribe came back for one night stand. What an amazing night. One of the best pay-per-views ever. And I wanted to ask you, what does ECW One Night Stand?
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Stan, mean to an ECW original? What does it mean to the meanie? And I also want to know a little tidbit as to what did Vince think about that show?
That's interesting. ECW One Night Stand, the first one, was a love letter to the ECW fans. ECW was just ripped away, you know. I guess Paul knew that the company was coming to an end. A lot of wrestlers and a lot of fans had no clue because ECW was still selling out buildings. We were still drawing amazing houses and doing great, you know, TV, but the burden with ECW was it took so long for them to catch up where, say, they had a great financial year in 1996, they're still paying for 1995.
Yeah.
No, 1997, they're still paying for 1996. And they start catching up a little bit, and then they get the TV deal with TNN, which became this financial burden that ultimately was the demise of ECW because TNN wanted ECW to pay for all the production. We had to pay for the production truck, all that stuff. So that, you know, ECW went away. And it was crazy because there was the last show was in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, maybe? Mm-hmm. Somewhere in Arkansas. And the week before was the ECW arena. I was like, why don't you just have the last show at the arena? But ECW gets ripped away. And there's again, when Tri-State Wrestling guys are out of, you know, business, there's this void that we felt, you know, when Tri-State went out. Now ECW's gone. It's like, man. And people are like, I miss ECW. You know, because it was a thing. ECW was a culture. You go to the show. After the show, you go to the hotel, hanging with the wrestlers, and you're drinking and partying. You know, everybody's got a hotel room, you know, with the deadbolt in the door. You walk into a room, hey, there's some beer in the tub, go get a beer. You know, you go to, you know, party hop, and you know, that was the culture of ECW, and all of a sudden that gets ripped away. Man, just left a big void. So when there was rumblings about a reunion show, we're like, ooh, you know, because they had just did a DVD called The Rise and Fall of ECW, which was excellent. If you like Rise and Fall ECW, there's also two other documentaries, one called Forever Hardcore, which is a good sister companion piece to Rise and Fall. And then there's an independent one called Barbed Wire City, which is really good. Those come out, and those documentaries, you know, introduce ECW to a whole new world. So when Rise and Fall came out, the sales shot through the roof. The only thing that, you know, beat Rise and Fall of ECW in DVD sales was that year's WrestleMania. So Vince is like, you know, so Rob, you know, goes to him with the idea of, you know, a reunion show, you know, and there's the rumors flying. We're like, ooh, I'm like, I hope they call me, you know, and they called me maybe like 2 weeks out. And I found out that, you know, I had changed my number so many times, it took them a while to find me. So, you know, I was relieved. I was like, whew, they didn't forget me. So, you know, it was awesome to go there that day. You know, I rode up that day with Ring announcer Bob Ortiz, his wife Lex, the referees Finnegan and Maono and Francine rode up, and it was just like a magical time showing up to that building, you know, Hammerstein Ballroom, you know, seeing all the boys there, you know, seeing some of the WWE guys there. And it was just a perfect opportunity to realize who I am, because, you know, from 2000 to maybe 2004, 2005, I'd kind of gotten to a bad way mentally, you know. 2000, you know, ECW goes out of business, WCW goes out of business, and I'm like, oh, what am I going to do? Because when you get released from WWE, Mick Foley was like, oh, you'll make a killing on the indies, right? You know, right off WWF TV, you'll be booked for a good couple of years, you know. So I leave WWF. Two major companies go business. The indies get flooded with all this talent, and you're like, you're fighting to find a spot. So get into a little bit of a depression. 2000, my grandmom, year 2000, my grandmom passed away. Whew. No, you know, those years are, I call them my dark years, but you know, I get called for ECW One Night Stand, and we have the reunion with the BWO, and we were in a pretty important spot there. You know, we come out during, you know, Tommy Dreamer and Sandman versus the Dudleys and get involved with that match. And then we had the schmoz at the end, and everybody knows about the JBL thing, you know, me and JBL, but there's a positive to it. Me and JBL had our issue. You know, we got into a fight in the ring, based off of, you know, me saying something about him. You know, when I left WWF, I was like, thank WWF for the opportunity to see the world. And just in passing, I said, you know, JBL was a bully. And, you know, how, you know, you could take one line and it becomes this big thing, you know, the game of telephone or the grapevine. And by the time it got to JBL or Bradshaw, you know how the boys are. They probably added to it and this, that, and the other thing. So One Night Stand, we had the schmoz at the end. Me and JBL get to a fight. And we go to the locker room and, you know, we have words there. And then I get brought back. And then, you know, they, you know, at a SmackDown Raw tape. I'll get back to One Night Stand, trust me. But talk about positivity. This is like a gray, a silver lining to a bad situation. I have to talk about it because sure. They brought me back and they put me and JBL in a room and we just talked it out like men. It was like, you know, we got went in a room. He's like, we can either, you know, fight or make money. I was like, well, brother, I never wanted to fight you. I always liked you. I told him I was always a big fan of Bradshaw and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And we shook hands and we're friends to this day. But, you know, everybody talks about One Night Stand and the fight we had, but after that, people started, you know, using me more and going, hey, Blue Meanie, I want you. So I went from this guy who couldn't catch a booking, you know, to being really depressed and forgetting who I was to realizing how many people actually appreciated me and liked me. It's just, I had went away for a little bit and nobody could find me. And it took something like One Night Stand for me to find myself. You know, something bad happened, but in that bad thing, it pulled me out of the spiral I was in. And, you know, I look back at, you know, people, you know, think, oh, you know, think it was one of the worst times of my life, but in a way it was a blessing in disguise because, you know, I found confidence in myself to go out and be the Blue Meanie again and go out and perform and, you know, entertain people, go to conventions and interact with people. And to this day, me and Bradshaw and, you know, / JBL are great friends. You know, I do his podcasts every now and then, and him and Gerald Briscoe have a podcast, but back to One Night Stand, that was the perfect love letter to the ECW fans because those fans they're like the puppy waiting for the master to come home, you know, to tell him what to do, you know, he'll be back one day, you know, and then ECW comes back and you're like, this is the greatest night ever. And it was because, you know, I'd gone back to WWE for a little bit after that, but everybody would talk about that One Night Stand show, you know, if you're around TV, you know, the TV tapings, you're hanging out with crew and you know, cameramans or one cameraman was like, dude, that was probably the wildest thing I ever filmed because, you know, He's like, I had the camera, but I had to take my eye away from the viewfinder just to look around to see what was going on with this crowd and everything. And, you know, during the Masato Tanaka Mike Awesome match, I'm sitting back in the back watching the monitor, and Vince is at gorilla position, and they're just destroying each other. And you hear Vince going, oh my God. Oh, you know, he's selling for the stuff they're doing. He's like, oh, you know, just watching Vince McMahon watch Masato Tanaka and Mike Awesome. I wish somebody had a camera on him, you know, just to watch him watch that match. But, you know, end of the night, you know, me and JBL had our thing, but I'm standing there. I got one beer in one hand, got a beer on my eye, ice in my eye, the beer with the people who I call family, the ECW family. You know, a lot of times, you know, we get, you know, there's a bunch of us ECW wrestlers at conventions. We get together kind of like, you know, the 72 Dolphins, you know, who get together once a year and celebrate their perfect season. We get together and celebrate each other because, you know, there's a moment, you know, we were able to do something in ECW and we came together as a family. We truly were as a family, where I learned when I went to WWF that, you know, it's a little bit more competitive and people want their spot, and in ECW we all lifted each other up. So, you know, we get together, we're extremely, no pun intended, we're a tight unit. And sadly, when we lose a member of that family, we all reach out to each other and remind each other that we love each other. And you know, we're a special group. It's just like a secondary family. I talk to most ECW people more than I talk to, you know, members of my own family. So that's how tight we are, and we will always will be.
How heartwarming is that as a final sentiment for One Night Stand? I mean, just to tell you my positive story, and this is from an individual that was on the other side of the world from where you guys were in the Hammerstein Ballroom 20 years ago today. For us as UK fans, we have to stay up late. Your show start like 7, 8 o'clock. Ours don't start till 1 a.m. in the morning, all right? So I'm
Over two centuries ago, it was England that taxed our tea. Now it's Brussels trying to regulate our companies. Under new European regulations, American businesses face crushing fines, forced disclosures, and foreign red tape that kills jobs here at home. America's laws should be written in America, not Brussels. Reject European regulatory overreach and uphold Trump's trade deal. Paid for by Americans for Limited Government.
I'm 21 at the time. I'm with my wife, my girlfriend at the time, my wife now. And she's upstairs in bed, and this is my parents' house. And I'm sat downstairs watching ECW One Night Stand. And it gets to about 3:30 in the morning. Everything's just wrapping up. It's the embrace. In fact, it was the spot where Sandman's music hits.
Yeah.
Metallica rings through, and you just see Dreamer go. And my wife appears at the top of the stairs and walks down the stairs, and she looks at me and she goes, "Are you crying?" And I go, "Oh, you're crying." And that was it. There was just a tear running down my face. And to know that you had impacted so many people around the world with a product that was just all heart, from us to you guys, thank you.
Thanks. Oh man, it's one of those things you look back and you go, wow, we really did that, right? So it's, you know, I have this weird moment. I don't know, Brian, I don't know if you have this as well. Sometimes you'll be watching yourself wrestling and you go, oh, that's me on the screen right there. You know, watch
at times. Yes.
Yeah. I have to ask Brian, I mean, you were in the business around that time. I mean, what did, you know, being a wrestler in the business in another company, was there murmurs about ECW wherever, you know, in WWF, WCW, when you were there?
Oh, we were all very aware of the product and how you guys were doing. Yes. I think that it seems like we were always watching each other, kind of situation where we were, you know, during the, when things got really hot and heavy, and it was all about the battle of the ratings, we were always watching this show. And of course, on TBS, we would get the replay of Nitro. So we would work the show, and by the time we left the locker room and got to the hotel, it would be on there. Then everyone would meet in the bar and we would watch the replay. And of course, if we could, watch your guys' show. So it was sort of a back and forth. But again, you know, the competition brings the best out of everybody and elevates everyone. And I want to circle back to I just think a silver lining in that show is that you and Bradshaw were able to talk and like two men and just work things out. It's such a great thing. And you guys are friends today. You've done his show and you guys still talk and I'm sure you probably even hang out at conventions and stuff. So I just think that's a great thing, man. So that you guys can still, you know, hey, that happened then. This is now. We're adults. It's a business. It's a work. And you guys are friends. I like that.
My only regret, and it's impossible to do. I wish I could take my 52-year-old brain and put it in my 25-year-old back then, because I was so paranoid in that locker room. I didn't want to do anything to upset the apple cart and lose my job. I just wanted to support my family. But I wish I had the foresight to go back in time and as that 25-year-old go up to Bradshaw and be like, hey, can we talk? And just be like, hey, is there an issue here? You know, just like having a friendly conversation of like, am I doing something wrong? And if I had done that, we might have avoided the whole thing years later at One Night Stand. But then again, the whole thing at One Night Stand was something I kind of needed, as weird as it sounds, to get me out of the mental funk that I was in, because so many people rallied behind me and were in my corner. It was a weird time too, because after that happened, I had other people in the business reaching out to me going, oh, you got to sue. You know, you got to go to New York and file charges at the, you know, the police headquarters. I'm like, folks, I just want to live my life, man. And, you know, eventually, you know, we got together, they brought me out to California where we got to go in the room and talk it out. And we had a really good match on SmackDown. And, a couple years later, Twitter's a thing, and somebody I get tagged in the post going, are my eyes deceiving me? But is Brett, you know, is JBL following the Blue Meanie on Twitter? And he's like, I love Meanie, he's great, you know. And then, you know, from there, JBL Bradshaw, he, you know, petitioned for me behind the scenes to try to get me in the Royal Rumble that was here in Philadelphia, because WWE hired me and Steve Rich to host ECW Armor Release Volume 3. I was like, what better way for me to promote something that they're selling? Have me come out in the Rumble and be like, here comes one of the hosts of ECW Armor Release Volume 3, the Blue Meanie. And even if I just get bushwhackered in and out, they're promoting the product that they paid me to, you know, to do. So, and he was going up to, you know, people in the office, and, you know, it came down to me and Bubba Ray Dudley, and they brought Bubba back. And I love Bubba. I'm happy for Bubba. But, you know, again, he didn't have to do that for me, and he did. And, you know, he's looked out for me in a lot of different ways. And, you know, people are like, oh, you should have sued. But I came out of that ugly situation just fine, you know, in other ways that didn't have to involve lawyers and ugliness and pettiness and, you know, greed, you know.
Yeah.
Two guys had a fight, and two guys worked it out, and two guys are friends to this day that, you know, and I appreciate that. Like I said, you have to go through the sour to appreciate the sweet. In order to appreciate the sweet, you have to go through the sour. And right now I'm appreciating the sweet.
How amazing is that?
Great to hear.
What a positive story. What a positive outcome. And professional wrestling is an industry like no other. Because you can work at McDonald's and have a fist fight with somebody behind the counter, and a couple of years later you do a podcast about it. It just wouldn't happen. One of you would be in jail.
I have to say, like, I heard the saying from Jeff Jarrett, and I don't know if he coined the phrase, but it's so perfect when it comes to professional wrestling. For those who believe, no explanation is necessary. For those who don't believe, no explanation will ever do, you know, when it comes to professional wrestling. And those who get it. Yeah. And we look on those at people on the outside of wrestling going, man, you're really missing out on something cool. You know?
I completely feel you. Now, speaking of something cool, as we do here on The Meltdown, we like to play some games with our guests.
Awesome. So,
right now, I'm going to play a game with the two Bryans. We're going to face off the Blue Meanie and Adam Bomb. It's going to be the Blue Guy versus the Creation of Devastation. And we're going to see, unknown, if either of you mash up on the next question that I'm going to pose. Okay. I'm going to invite you to give me your Mount Rushmore of extreme. Wow. Who would be your top four faces as we bring back the Tribe of Extreme?
Man, this is a rough task because there's so many good workers who work that style. Who goes first?
So I'm going to pose it to Meanie first.
Oh, and we're going to compare notes.
Yes, there that's right. Go. Exactly. Yeah.
So maybe I'll say a name and then Brian could tell me whether it's on his list or not.
At the end.
Okay. Cool. I just wanted to get the boundaries correct. Sure. So number one, I would have to say, and it's somebody's whose book I'm reading right now, but I'll have to say the original Sheik.
Good one. Okay. That's interesting. Okay, so just before we go on to the second, just because it's a name that is synonymous with professional wrestling, massive Michigan name, obviously the uncle of the late, great Sabu, why would Sheik make your...
Well, I mean, pro wrestling helped launch television. And when, wrestling being launched television, Sheik was one of the pioneers of that age of... pro wrestling on TV. If it wasn't for pro wrestling, television might not have evolved because it was good content. It was cheap content to produce, and pro wrestling was on TV all the time. And Sheik was one of those characters, and he started doing the wild brawling, and he would pull the pencil out of his boot and be the rule breaking heel, and he would cause panic wherever he went and riots and. You know, he did it for 50 years. You know, he started wrestling in the 50s, and he's in FMW with Sabu doing matches where they're wrestling in a ring that's on fire. I mean, how hardcore can you get, you know? So,
well, we are chatting with Adam Bomb right here. He's a nuclear blast himself.
There you go. So, but
that's a great answer.
I don't know if really good.
It, but he was definitely one of the forefronts of, that crazy style of wrestling where you didn't know he'd bite you, he'd pull out the pencil, he caused panic, and he was the master of kayfabe because I don't think everybody's ever heard his real voice because he would never, he was the Sheik to the point where his grandkids called him Sheik, you know?
Wow.
So he would have to be my first one.
That is a great name. And I was so sorry to cut you off. It was just because as we just, tailoring back a little bit, massive tape trading fan back in the 90s, we were focused on the Sheik. He was just such a huge deal to us as tape traders.
I got to meet him once. I was on one of Sabu's shows and he brought the Sheik in, and Sheik pulls into the building in the limo as he does. And I just ran over and went, "Hello, Mr. Sheik," and I ran away. I don't want to get any heat, but I walked up and said, hi, Mr. Sheik, and just ran off.
Meanie fangirl. Love it.
Yes.
Love it. Right. Name number two.
Ooh. Another name that, brought fear into people and, scared fans, but was very influential. I'll have to say Bruiser Brody. Bruiser Brody. He would go to Japan and the fans would part like the Red Sea, he'd have the chain and the fur and just brawl through crowds, him and Abdul the Butcher, bleeding all over and smashing each other up. The worst part about Bruiser Brody dying by the fact that he died before his time was due, I would have loved to have seen Bruiser Brody in ECW.
Without a shadow of a doubt, 1,000%. And yeah. Brody actually featured on one of Brian's Mount Rushmores a couple of weeks ago, right, brother? He was on your best big men Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, very influential and very copied. The first two people I talked about, they're copied. To the fact that, when you say the Sheik, you have to say the original Sheik because there's so many Sheiks afterwards. Back in the day, he was just Sheik. But now we have to say original chic because so many people copied them, you know?
Well, yeah. Original Blue Meanie, tell us who the number three is.
Oh, man. Number three, I would have to say hardcore wrestler. I would have to say Terry Funk.
How could you not?
Terry Funk, talk about a guy, you know, he was the Willie Nelson of professional wrestling, you know? Now he started off clean cut, hair swooped to the side, suit and tie, NWA champion, and then he became this rebel. You know, Willie Nelson started off singing medleys, wearing a suit and tie, and eventually he grew out his pigtails, put on a headband, start smoking the jazz cabbage, and then, you know, just, you know, having a good time, you know? So in a lot of ways, Terry Funk, you know, and Willie Nelson were a lot alike, but, you know, if there wasn't Terry Funk, there wouldn't have been ECW. Terry Funk lent so much credibility to ECW that he would look around the locker room and goes, oh, I could do something with that guy, and I could do something with that guy, I could do something with that guy. I got to do something with Terry Funk at November 98. And, you know, he went from being the clean-cut wrestler to this brawler. You know, again, he's over in Japan doing death matches with, you know, Cactus Jack. And, you know, he changed up. He evolved with the times. But, you know, and if I can go on my soapbox for a little bit, you know, everybody equates hardcore with brawling and this stuff. And, you know, but in early days of hardcore wrestling meant for the hardcore fans, you know, the fans that would like, well, I could pay my electric bill this week, or I could go to a wrestling show. You know, I could eat, you know, have a sandwich, you know, I got to have enough to eat, you know, food and put food in the fridge, or I could go to a wrestling event. Those were the hardcore fans, and you know, that style of wrestling appealed to the hardcore fans, but it became equated with brawling. But Terry Funk was one of those guys that, you know, most people would do without so they could just be able to afford to buy a ticket to go watch him wrestle.
1,000%. 1,000%. You couldn't have had that list without Terry Funk. I'll be very surprised if Ryan does not echo those sentiments. But number four, let's see what we got. Number four.
And this is going to be the hardest one, because to me, it's down to two people. you know, a one and one A. You know, again, these aren't in, you know, Sheik would be number one because he was the originator. He came in with the advent of television. And to me, it's a coin flip between Cactus Jack and Sabu. You know, Cactus Jack, a pioneer of the Philly wrestling scene. Like you said, you saw him do those matches with Eddie Gilbert. Mm-hmm. You know, they had a 2 out of 3 falls match where one match was an ambulance match, one was a false count anywhere match, and then they finished it off with a barbed wire match all in one night. Yeah. You know, Cactus Jack or Eddie Gilbert breaking a bottle over Cactus Jack's head and having to go to the hospital. But then again, there's Sabu, you know, who had the feud with Cactus Jack, where I watched him wrestle in the Hamburg Fieldhouse, and, you know, Sabu goes to do a Psy moonsault on Cactus and misses and lands ribs first onto the guardrail and continued the match. You know,
I remember that match. Is that the match where he tries to break the beer bottle on Cactus's head?
And it was I was in the crowd for that, and it was the sickest sound you can ever imagine. You hear him go bleep, and he would swear, you know, crap, you know, and eventually it broke. But my final spot, you know, like I said, it's a coin flip, but I'll have to go with Sabu. Sabu was always, I mean, he did the hardcore stuff. He could work, but like, I mean, how many times do people bust out tables? How many people use chairs? I always to say that the sad thing about Sabu is that you couldn't trademark move sets or spots, because he would have been a billionaire with all the stuff that he brought into the wrestling business that people emulate to this day. So, Cactus did hardcore, but he went off to be, you know, Mankind, which is still a big character. But as far as hardcore goes, Sabu was hardcore his whole career up until the end. So I have to say Sabu for my fourth and final.
What a foursome. What a foursome. As we raise our fingers to the sky, Sabu, we love you. We have done a massive memorial to Sabu on this show, and yes, we will carry on that love train.
We're going to have a memorial for him here in Philly, June 25th at the ECW Arena. So if you're watching and you're listening to this, make your way out to Philly. It's going to be a Wednesday night, and we're going to have a memorial. It's not a wrestling show. It's a memorial service. So come on out, and let's pay tribute to Sabu.
Love it.
Let's do it. Love it. Brian, I'm going to bat it over to you, big man. Let's see who is on your Mount Rushmore of Extreme. Who are you taking it to the hardcore with? And do any of yours match up with me?
Oh, yes. We have some matches, no doubt.
Nice. Listen,
in no particular order.
Great Brian's earlier. Think alike.
There you go. Here it is. Okay. Terry Funk.
Boom.
Nice.
Bruiser Brody.
Boom. Two.
Ooh.
Sabu.
Boom. Oh. We're in three. Three for three right now. Who's the fourth?
And listen, I went back and forth with this.
Drum roll. Give them the drum.
There are so many that could have worked and slipped right into this spot. But I'm going to go a little old school here and hit you with Abdullah the Butcher.
There we go.
No arguments for me, my friend. Yeah, talking right. About another guy who scared people. Just
Japan, Puerto Rico, around the world.
Yeah, and that's why I said Mount Rushmores are tough.
They are, yeah.
But there's no arguing with that. And Abdullah, to this day, still instills fear into folks.
Yes.
That's a great list.
Thank you. I think they're both great. I really do. They're excellent choices.
Absolutely.
And we like playing these games, and it's tough for Brian because I pose these questions to him every week. So he has to come up with another four every week for a different category, right? Well, we're going to carry on that trend. It's like a full-on game show. And being a Guinness World Record holding game show host, I'm going to pose our final big question over to the meanie. I'm going to invite you to play a little game called Winner Stays On with us. I don't know whether you've seen any of our wonderful Instagram posts from some of our other past guests, whether it was Gene Snitsky, who was doing Monsters, whether it was Alex Wright doing European wrestlers, whether it was Mark Marrow, who we took to dual sports athletes. But we are going to go all extreme with this one and the meanie. I'm going to pose you two names. You've got to keep one and get rid of one. Keep goes to the next round, and we find out at the end who would be the supreme champion. So, meanie. Flexed. Are we ready? Have we danced it out? Let's go. Let's go, brother. Here we go.
Here we go. Here it is.
First two names. Tommy Dreamer and Rhino.
So one stays, one goes.
One stays, one goes.
And talk about two guys who have been instrumental in my career. Dreamer.
He's got to be quick as well. He's got to be like, first one that comes to your head, you're just like, boom, go for it. Dreamer, Rhino.
Dreamer.
Boom. Rhino just took a gore. Dreamer or Terry Funk?
Terry Funk.
The innovator of violence has just taken a nap. Terry Funk or Rob Van Dam?
Terry Funk.
Five star out of here. Terry Funk or Mike Awesome?
Terry Funk.
This could be Otto Vance. It could be Otto Vance too. Alex Wright went all the way through this game, and Otto Vance was the answer to everyone that he gave.
But Terry Funk. I eliminate would agree.
Okay. Terry Funk and Public Enemy.
Oh, Terry Funk.
That was quick.
That was quick.
Terry Funk or Todd Gordon? Now it gets a bit difficult.
Yeah. Because Todd booked Terry Funk. But I'd still go with Terry Funk.
Keeping Terry. Okay. Terry or Shane?
Shane Douglas.
Shane Douglas.
Terry Funk.
Okay. Terry Funk or Sabu?
Sabu.
Terry stays. No, he didn't get all the way through to the end, Brian.
It's just like a fight in Roadhouse. Just like a fight in Roadhouse. I thought the Funk was going to keep rolling. All right.
He got put in a box. He couldn't get out of this box. And we all know if you come out of a box, you're over. Well, Sabu is reigning right now. So we go to Sabu or Raven?
Raven.
Okay. I like it. Triple jumped out of the contest. Raven or the FBI?
Raven.
Raven or Beulah McGillicuddy?
Raven.
Raven or the Sandman?
Ooh. Raven.
Raven or Jerry Lynn?
Raven.
Two left. Raven or the Human Suplex Machine, Taz?
Oh, we don't make it easy. We do not make it easy. Raven.
Okay, Raven's into the final. The final name, Raven or the Blue World Order?
Oh, I have to do Raven.
Oh! Didn't put himself over, Raven. Brian.
Oh, you didn't put yourself over, I thought. Oh, that was close.
Well, without Raven, there wouldn't be a Blue World Order. So
I think we're going to have to send this to Scotty, right? To know that he went over full force.
Yeah. Oh, great.
I love that, man. Round of applause for that. Well done, Meanie.
Excellent.
The way that we came all the way. Now, you see, you are only one of two that haven't put themselves over in the final two.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
So you are of a high echelon, of a unique group. We love that. Well done. Excellent.
I did so many jobs. I sold advertising on the soles of my shoes.
Great.
That is amazing. Amazing. Well, well, well. It's been an absolute pleasure you being with us. Just before we wrap everything up, we're going to actually see Meanie in person for the Love of Wrestling in February 2026. We can't wait to welcome you with open arms and a pint of draft all ready for the Meanie's appearance. It's going to be a pleasure joining you in Manchester. We are going to have fun all the way through. But you've got some wonderful conventions coming up as well. Talk to our fans about some of the conventions that you have got in the very near future.
Well, the main one I got is coming up this Saturday in Springfield, Massachusetts. It'll be me, JBL, Ivory, Val Venus. For more information, go to my social media pages. I have all my dates up there on all forms of social media at Blue Meanie BWO, wherever you do your social media stuff. But if you would like to support the Blue Meanie, go to prowrestlingtees.com/Blue Meanie, get yourself a BWO shirt. I also have a podcast called Mind of the Meanie, which airs every Monday morning, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And I also do a podcast for ad-free shows called Mornings with Meanie, where I talk about weekly happenings in professional wrestling. It's a little get together over some coffee and talk about wrestling. So I'm keeping busy. So
love to hear that. Yes.
Well, it's been such a pleasure you being with us. I hope you've enjoyed a little trip to the Meltdown.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I always like I said, I treat conventions like high school reunions, and doing shows like this, it's getting to talk, you know, with like-minded folks. You know, this it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure in a lot of ways, a learning experience as well.
Well, Brian, we thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to visit us here on the Meltdown. And you have been a fantastic guest. We love that you played all the games and gave it your all. We love it. And again, you're always welcome back here anytime, my friend. So again, thank you for visiting us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and continued success to you on this podcast.
Awesome,
ladies and gentlemen, the Blue Meanie. Boom! What a conversation with an ECW original on the 20th anniversary of One Night Stand. It was our pleasure to welcome the Blue Meanie onto the Meltdown. And all the positivity that exuded from his blue veins was just something to behold. Thank you so much to Mr. Heffron, who joined us on this beautiful Meltdown Monday. Now, before we wrap everything up in a nice big bow, as we like to do here on the Meltdown, we want to open our Meltdown mailbag to you guys. So if you've got those probing questions that you want to allow me to bat up and boot over the pond to the big brother himself, do let us know. But we've got a smorgasbord of gorgeous questions, and I've picked two out of the mailbag this week. So let's find out what you guys are going to pose to the creation of Devastation. Our first comes from Newcastle, England, from Toby, Baltimore. Toby asks, if Brian had the pencil to book the main event of any WrestleMania covering all timelines, who would you think would bring the biggest draw? So who would you have? Would it be a one-on-one? Would we do a schmoz of a three-way, four-way? What are we thinking, Brian? What would give us the biggest gate, the biggest turnaround, the biggest numbers for any Mania main event?
Wow. Great question, by the way. Thank you for that. Wow, this could go so many different ways. I always thought of the WrestleMania main event. I always think one-on-one. And again, three ways could maybe just depending on how you present it and build it up. But I always thought I would like to see, I always thought that Ravishing Rick Rude should be in that top spot because he had so much heat. And if we put them together with these two individuals together at the time of their highest popularity, and I would say Hogan and Ravishing Rick Rude, built properly, could be one of the, if not the biggest gate of all time. And I'm just going, I know that's a little old school answer, but there's a lot of spins on a lot of things. It's just all about the building of it.
There are so many, that is like an onion. There is so many layers to that. Yeah. You could really unravel it. What an answer. Yeah, Ravishing Rick against the immortal one. Hulk Hogan. And I, you know what I don't think Rick Rude would accept? That don't work for me, brother. I just don't think he'd accept it.
Just saying. Doesn't work.
He's always packing. What a great answer. Thank you so much, Toby, for your question. Well, we're going to go to our second question. And this one comes from the other side of the pond. And we're going to take it to the home of this year's WrestleMania. And incidentally, next year's WrestleMania, Las Vegas, Nevada. Melanie Fontaine asks, are you a fan of AEW?
Oh, thank you, Melanie. We, by the way, we had a blast in Vegas and we will have another blast because I'm sure we will be returning. So thank you for your hospitality in your town. Yeah, I do watch AEW. Yes, I try to watch it. There's so much wrestling content across, not just on social media, of course, but on the shows itself, Netflix, USA, TBS, of course. So yeah, I do watch it and I try to, if for some reason I miss it, I will record and then go back and revisit what I missed. So yes, I am enjoying all of as much wrestling content as I can handle. So yes, I do enjoy it.
So many incredible stars in All Elite Wrestling, whether it be the Young Bucks or Kenny Omega or Swerve Strickland, MJF, the Hurt Business. There are so many wonderful talents in AEW, but no one as big and as bad as the guest that we are about to reveal for episode number 12. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be joined by the Machine. Brian Cage is going to be joining us next week for episode 12. So if you guys have got questions that you would like to pose to the man beast, the behemoth himself, he has got utterly huge peaks. Oh my goodness me. Check out his Instagram page. He has just undergone surgery and it looks like he has just stepped out of the gym. He is jacked, and we can't wait to welcome him to the next episode of the Melt. It's going to be a big one, right, Brian? It's going to be a big one.
I'm excited about it. I got to meet Brian in Vegas, and what a great guy. He was just, you know, getting ready for surgery. And again, he is, like you said, Tomcat, he is stacked, jacked, and ready to go. And where else can we have him? Each week, we get these major superstars from everywhere. From pro wrestling, we have MMA stars coming up, Hollywood celebrities. We're doing it all right here on the Meltdown because what we do is what we do best, and that's breaking necks and cashing checks. The Tomcat and the Creation of Devastation right here in Tucson, Arizona. We cannot wait to have Brian Cage on the show.
We are going to tie everything up in a beautiful big bow, and it seems like that bow is made of barbed wire this week as we dedicate the show to the extreme. Thank you once again for the Blue Meanie for joining us and bringing a little blue world order to the meltdown. From Manchester here in the UK to Tucson, Arizona, thank you for joining us on the meltdown.